There were two men in the office. Eric recognized one of them right away by his thick mutton chop sideburns. It was legendary aircraft designer Rick Butterfield. The other was a tall patrician figure with a shock of white hair. He wore a banker's three-piece suit, with the chain of a Phi Beta Kappa key arcing across his waistcoat. Eric put his age on the high side of 70. "Mr. Stone," he said, extending a hand, "I so rarely get to meet members of Juan's team." "Are you Langston Overholt?" Eric asked with awe. "I am, my boy, I am. Although you have never and most likely will never meet me. Do you understand?" Eric nodded. "I really shouldn't have come at all. This is a private deal between the corporation and Mr. Butterfield's company, after all." Butterfield asked Eric, "What time do we need to do this?" "Using tracking data from NORAD, I calculate that to make an intercept, I have to be in position at exactly 8:14 and 31.6 seconds tomorrow morning."
"I can't guarantee you that kind of time accuracy. We'll need an hour just to get to altitude, and another 6 minutes for the burn."
"A minute either way shouldn't make much of a difference," Eric said to reassure him. "Mr. Butterfield, I want you to understand the gravity of this situation. There are literally millions of lives counting on us. I know that sounds like a line from a bad spy novel, but it is the truth. If we fail, the people of the world are going to suffer in unspeakable agony."
"I'm on board, kid, 100%.
"Thank you, sir."
"You ever taken any serious G's, son?" Taggart asked.
"When I was in the Navy, I was launched off a carrier. That was about 3, maybe 3.5.
"You barf easy?"
"It's why I'm here and another one of my associates isn't. I'm a member of ACE, American Coaster Enthusiasts. I spend my vacations riding roller coasters. Haven't been sick once."
"Good enough for me, Rick."
"I'm not going to have you sign a bunch of insurance waivers and all that boilerplate. I can vouch for my bird so long as you vouch for your health."
"My company gives us physicals every 6 months. There's nothing wrong with me that these eyeglasses can't correct."
"Mr. Butterfield," Eric went on, "I do have one request."
"Shoot."
"I'd like to see the plane."
Butterfield nodded and sauntered from the office, Eric, Taggart, and Overholt in tow. There was a handheld remote dangling from a long cord next to the shrouded plane. He hit a button, and a winch started to draw the tarp ceilingward. Painted glossy white with little blue stars, the mother plane, called Kanga, looked unlike any other aircraft in the world. It had gull wings, like the venerable World War II Corsair, but they started high on the fuselage and angled downward so that the airframe sat on tall landing gear. It had two jet engines above the single-seat cockpit and twin spars under the wings that tapered back to a pair of delta-shaped tail assemblies. But what was nestled under the larger plane was what held Stone's attention. Rue was a rocket-powered glider with a single flat wing that could be hinged upward to impart drag after it had exhausted its load of fuel. Capable of speeds in excess of 2,000 miles per hour, Rue was a suborbital spaceplane. And while it wasn't the first privately funded craft, it already held the record for altitude at nearly 120 kilometers, or almost 75 miles above the Earth. Rue was carried to 38,000 feet by Kanga. The two would separate, and the rocket motor would be engaged so that Rue screamed toward the heavens on a ballistic parabola that would carry it some 60 miles downrange. It would then glide back to its home base for refueling. The intention of Butterfield and his investors was to take adventure seekers on a suborbital flight so they could feel the freedom of weightlessness at the very edge of space. Eric Stone was about to become their first paying customer, although he wasn't after thrills. His idea was to time the flight so that at its apogee he would be within range of the Russian weapons platform's damaged antenna. Using the codes Juan had gotten from intelligence sources, Eric would reposition the satellite so it would launch one of its projectiles at Eos Island. The kinetic energy of the 1,800-pound tungsten rod striking anywhere on the island would obliterate the ELF transmitter.
"She's something god-awful ugly, isn't she?" Butterfield said with pride.
"What's it like flying in her?" Eric asked.
"I wouldn't know." Butterfield tapped his chest. "Bum ticker."
The test pilot, Taggart, said,
"Son, this thing is going to ruin you for them roller coasters you like so much, 'cause this is one ride that'll top 'em all."